Welcome back to the Bait and Switch podcast. My name is Jim Martin, along with my co-host, Chris Beyer. We are here via Zoom one more time, still in the coronavirus quarantine, whatever you want to call it. So today we are welcoming back former guest, fan favorite. Everybody give a warm welcome for Dr. Tim Oakland. Welcome back, Tim. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Jim.
You said fan favorite. Yep. Actually, Tim's episodes for season two were the most listened to episodes of season two.
That's right.
Great. Build high expectations.
That's right. We definitely have high expectations for this one. Hey, I want to start off by saying I'm a huge fan of your work.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Tim, all you do, you excel at. I mean, all your books, your lectures, everything.
It's amazing how you keep up the energy to do all that. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, it's not easy.
Diet, exercise, meditation.
Meditation, yes.
Yeah.
Vitamin C, zinc.
You take
take some fish oils now and then.
Yeah. Sure. Hydroxychloroquine, you taking that?
No.
Do you have like a daily routine you can walk us through? Is there anything, you know, special that
daily
you
routine? You know, I like daily routines. It's been really messed up during this pandemic. You know, sometimes I get up in the morning, I'm not really sure what day it is because my whole schedule has been kind of flipped on its side. So it's been a struggle, but it's been a struggle for everybody, you know?
The struggle is real.
The struggle is real.
Yeah.
But your work is inspiring.
Yeah.
Your interests are so eclectic. Your knowledge is so vast and varied. Where do you get time to do all the reading and all the research?
I make time. I'm big on time management. Set goals, you know, short term, long term. Try to see where I want to be 5 years from now.
How many languages again do you speak?
Well, I think on the last program we discussed how fluent I was in Norwegian.
I believe you've told me before that you're fluent in 12 languages.
How about you, Chris? How many languages do you know of?
Well, I did work on Spanish. And now I'm working a little bit on Slovakian.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow. Sure. Wow. Yeah. Say something in Slovakian.
Dobre noc.
Okay. And what does that mean?
That means good evening.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
How about you, Jim? You know any second languages, third languages?
Yeah, German. Yeah, I took German all through schools.
Dunkoff. Yeah, yeah. I might appear as a Dunkoff in this podcast.
I know that you always said that everything is 90% mental. Running a marathon, 90% mental, right? Only 10% physical. That's kind of one of your theories in life, I know.
Right. It's a battle of the wills. You got to tell your body to keep going. Fatigue makes cowards of us all. But if you're tough mentally, That's a big part of it.
You got to get the check up from the neck up.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I like that. It's all the mindset. I understand. I'm with you. I follow your stuff.
Yeah.
My motivational classes.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you the number of times I watched the TED Talk.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
mean, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, since we're in a difficult time now with this pandemic, how are you two guys coping? Found any mental strategies to get you through each day or?
Well, like Jim, I listen to your TED Talk. That's the first thing I do.
Sure. Wake up, crack of dawn, you know, like you say, you know, early bird gets the worm. I mean, I think you made that one.
That's so, right. Early to bed. What is that? Early to bed, early to rise.
You're asking us. You're saying.
Makes us all healthy and wise.
The one thing I'll say I do is I do get outside. I try and get outside as much as I can.
You know, I got some good sun today. Yeah. Sat out on my patio. I was wearing little to nothing, so I did burn on some spots. Viewers, use your imagination. I burned some spots today.
I saw the picture of the Sandhill Cranes.
Isn't that something? A family.
Yeah, on your driveway. You got Wild Kingdom going on there. You got coyotes. You got cranes. What else have you seen in your backyard?
I've got a picture of two bald eagles this year. Wow. And get a lot of hawks, you know, a lot of geese.
Yeah,
you said you've had cranes and herons, but you've had no egrets. That's how you live your life.
That would be correct.
No egrets. One thing I've always followed, one of your mottos, is you say that you'd like to be the last one to work and the first one to leave. That's
This is why I like it, is you turn things on its head.
Well, yeah. To elucidate on that a little bit, that's time management. You know, it's not the quantity of time, it's the quality. So if I get in there late, get down to business, focus. It's all about focus.
Get the hell out of there, yeah.
Get out of there early. It's got to be that way, I would imagine. You can't spend a lot of time in one spot. You got a lot of places to be almost at the same time sometimes, I would imagine.
There's no time to bleed in my world. No.
You go right from work to the lecture hall where you're a professor. But that's pro bono. All your stuff generally is free of charge, right?
Yes. You know, I do a lot of pro bono work. Yeah. You know, my dog wants to be let outside, so just keep talking. Right.
There you go. Get out of there, man.
All right. Sorry about that.
This is something we wouldn't be able to do in the studio. See, this is the kind of thing that this affords us, right?
Yeah. The dog has brought you a certain sense of serenity. We've talked about that before.
That's true. Basically, he's just a package of love. You know, he looks at me some days and I look at him, and together we can get through this pandemic. How about you guys? Have you guys been feeling any malaise lately or any physical discomfort from this? Or
I've got malaise, Jim.
Yeah, I've definitely had almost like malaise.
Have you ever been to Malaysia?
I have not. Chris might have.
I have been to Malaysia.
So what did you learn from spending time in Malaysia?
I found the malaise did have malaise.
They also have malaria there, don't they?
I probably took hydrochloroquine.
That's right. It all comes back to that.
In retrospect, maybe I did take hydrochloroquine. You know, when you go to places, maybe Africa, maybe not so much Malaysia, but they give you shots and different things.
Don't they give you a shot before you go and then every so often while you're there too?
I don't remember. It's been a while, but I probably took something.
You've obviously took something. probably took something for this podcast, huh?
Yeah, well, I told you, hydrochloroquine. What's the other one?
Remdesivir or something?
Oh, yeah, Remdesivir. I'm taking everything as a precaution.
You can never be too ventilator. Careful. You got your own ventilator at home?
Yeah, I use some Pringles cans and some Ziploc bags.
You got to make do with what you have.
That's inventive. I mean, I like that
Chris
idea.
Chris is very creative in that way. You're a modern-day MacGyver, kind of. Yeah, that's no good. BS aside, I've always felt that you're very crafty.
Okay. Yeah,
I am. Is that encyclopedias I see behind you there, Chris?
Yeah, I was just reading The Art of War by Sun Tzu. You're a big fan of Sun Tzu, right? 12th century China, right?
Not really.
Gosh, that surprises me. I mean, so much of your philosophy and the way you do things are so similar.
Sometimes people in totally different environments can come up with the same concepts.
There's no such thing as original thought, right? There's parallel thinking.
No, we're all capable of coming up with same ideas from different cultures.
What I learned from Sun Tzu is that if our guest is superior, that we evade him. And if he's angry, we irritate him. If we're equally matched, then we fight. And if not, we retreat and evaluate. And so that's how I've treated all these podcasts.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that. So all of a sudden, you'll just disappear sometimes. That's the thing. I think, where's he going? I didn't realize until just now. Yeah. That must have been one of the retreat times.
That's some good food for thought there, Chris.
Yeah.
Very scintillating conversation you always tend to engage in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you could pontificate, what would be your biggest takeaway from, what was it, Sung?
Sung Tzu. I want to know what the difference between scintillating and scintillating is.
Yeah, that's me too.
Well, scintillating is something fascinating or brilliantly clever.
Oh, okay.
Scintillating, I'm not sure.
So, Tim, tell us a little bit about the work you did with the foundation.
With the foundation.
Yeah.
Is it the Tim Oakland Foundation, the Timothy Oakland Foundation? What's the name of it again?
You tell me, Chris. I'm not really sure what foundation you're talking about. There's so many I've been involved in.
You know, the humility, too. I mean, it's like, you know, which one are you talking about?
The thing is, Jim, you have to remember that he's got a lot of irons in the fire. And so you name it, he helps.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I tell you, this is tough not seeing you guys in person. As Chris will tell you, most of my communication is body language anyway. So you guys can see my expressions and so forth. It's going to be really tough for your audience. Now, you guys have been doing this podcast for what, a couple of years now?
It's third yep. season now.
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. What would you say your viewer numbers are at?
You know what? We don't talk numbers.
That's right. You're humble that way. You know?
Yeah.
It's going to sound like bragging.
I'll say this, that the general trend has been going up, and that's the main thing that we look for.
You want to be trending upward. You don't want to flatten the curve at this point.
No.
And you know what? Sometimes it's baby steps. You know, it takes a while to get the vehicle in gear, but as long as you're progressing.
Yeah, I mean, that's so familiar. I hear that every day in my head, every day, Tim, baby steps,
right.
Baby steps.
It's not the large jumps. It's the, what is it, the tortoise and the hare? The hare takes off sprinting, but it's the tortoise that wins that race because he's slow and steady.
Now, somebody just today, we're talking about tortoises, and he said turtles are pretty fast, but tortoises are slow. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I couldn't even tell you what. I thought they were anonymous. Something like that.
They don't like to be known.
To be anonymous. Some like to be out there in the front lines. But I thought those terms were equally the same.
Synonymous.
Anonymous. Yeah, that's
right.
It.
Right.
Or unanimous. Yeah. One of the two.
Right.
Either one will work.
Yeah. The turtle's in the water, right? And the tortoise lives on the land, I think.
Well, I know like there's that. A sea turtle.
Yeah, you don't hear the sea tortoise.
No.
So I think that might be the distinction between the two. The turtle is in the water and the tortoise is on land.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very reserved. They don't come out of the shell that often.
That's a good point. True.
They're not social creatures. You never see like a bunch of turtles hanging out, just shooting the breeze, you know?
You got a wetland in your backyard.
I do.
Do you?
I do.
Do you see turtles and tortoises back there?
I do see turtles once in a while, but...
Are they good eating?
They make good soup, from what I hear.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a delicacy in Malaysia, I believe. Figured you would know that, having traveled.
I'll talk about Malaysian food. I was at some small street market in Malaysia. It was kind of an outdoor restaurant. There was a huge fish tank right next to me. And at one point, somebody came over and pointed at a big fish inside the fish tank that's the one he wanted to eat, right?
Right.
The guy reached down in the fish tank, grabbed the fish, and just inches from me, clubbed it to death by my foot. That's fresh.
Right. Well, Chris, you've always been a big fish in a small pond, from what I hear.
It's good to be a big fish in a small pond.
Right, right.
You're a big fish in a small pond, North Dakota. I mean, you're...
I think I'm a big fish in a big pond, I like to think.
Yeah. You went to, what was the name of the Fargo or mine? What university?
University of North Dakota. It's in Grand Forks.
And you played football for North Dakota, right?
Very little, very little. Played at Bismarck State College. Kind of gave it up after the junior college days.
Were you a tight end? What did you play?
You said I got a tight end. Is that what you said?
Well, that's no. The rumor, but...
Outside linebacker.
Did you get concussions?
You know, this was a long time ago in the early 80s, and there really wasn't any...
concussions?
Yeah, protocol back then.
There were no concussions back then. We didn't have concussions.
Dirt on it and got back in there, you know.
I'll let our listeners decide how many times you got hit in the head by how slowly you respond to our questions.
Right. That might have more to do with how many Maker's Mark whiskeys I've had.
Do you have a sponsor by any chance?
I know.
Brought to you by Maker's Mark. Yeah. Goes down smooth and easy. Just a little bit of ice.
Tennessee or a Kentucky straight bourbon.
In all seriousness, did you get your bell rung bad a couple times?
I would say yes. That was a long time ago. Don't have as good a memory as as I would like to. Boy, that's an old term. You don't hear that anymore. That guy got his bell rung.
That's a medical term.
Yeah. How about you, Chris? You were a big-time swimmer, weren't you?
Yeah, never got my bell rung in swimming.
Okay, not very
hit the wall
back there. Never hit the wall.
The main thing they don't tell you about is, you know, when your fingers get wrinkly when you swim, right?
Right.
Yeah. It can last a lifetime.
Permanent disability, permanency.
Yep. You know, Chris, it's sort of like reminds me of the MMA guys. You know, they got that cauliflower ear. That's how you can tell they've been boxing.
Oh, yeah.
With swimmers, if you see them and their hands are all shriveled up, they're, oh, look.
Right.
We wore the Speedo back in those days.
Right.
When's the last time you wore a Speedo, Tim?
I guess you would have to go into the teenage years for that, probably.
Your brother was a big-time swimmer.
Big-time swimmer, yeah.
Yeah, he
All-American.
That was back in the 80s, maybe.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think you guys are about the same age. What year did you graduate from high school, Chris?
I was 83. Jim was 88.
Yeah, he was 83, I believe. Yeah, I was 92. College, yeah, that was.
We don't talk about our professions on here too much, but I'm a chiropractor, and I think you told me you got into chiropractic because the chiropractor you went to was the one most able to treat your injuries from football.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of got into it through sports, and my mom always wanted me to be a chiropractor, so she was a big influence on that. I went into teaching first, was a biology teacher. So I taught high school for a while, varsity boys basketball coach, and then I was 26 when I started chiropractic school.
You were still pretty young when you made the switch. That had to take some gumption to switch professions midstream then.
Oh, you know, for the record, I was terrified. You know, it's always scary to get out of your comfort zone and try something new. But like I said, my mom was a big influence on going to chiropractic school, and I'd benefited myself, and she took us when we were young, helped me through sports and so forth. So, you know, at the time I was 26, wasn't married. So I thought this is a great opportunity to go back to school. And
that kind of brings us full circle, you know, here getting back to your philosophy and your books and your lectures and,
sure,
and all those things that the people love about you. Tim, well, I want to thank you for stopping by. As always, we learn very much from you. I want to thank you for your service.
Thanks for everything you do, Tim. You know, thanks. I appreciate it. Every day. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks again. We're going to wrap up, and we're going to come back in 5 minutes, and we're going to talk a little coronavirus. All right?
Sounds good.
And we're back at the Bait and Switch podcast for the second half of our interview with Tim Oakland, a returning guest from season 2. Today's podcast is going to be a little bit of a departure from our typical podcast. We usually do not do current events in our podcast. My goal has always been for this podcast that it's timeless in the sense that you can listen to any episode at any time. You know, there's no topical thing that we talk about, so that if you go back in our archives, it'll hopefully seem just as fresh as a brand new one. But this one will actually have a little bit of a timestamp to it because we are currently in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. It is late May of 2020. In mid-March of this year, started with lockdowns. And now we're getting towards the end of the mandatory lockdowns, and most states are reopening cautiously. There's still some restrictions going on. And there's a lot of debate going on amongst people as to whether we either reacted properly or we overreacted. And if you're listening to this in 2021, 2030, you'll hear a contemporaneous debate here about what was the proper course of action. So I'm going to kind of be the moderator for this. I will say that my personal belief on this is that we've overreacted to some extent, but I'm going to try and play devil's advocate on either side. We got our friend Tim returning. Tim might be a little bit more on the side of that we've gone a little too far, and Jim might be a little bit more on the side that we're doing the prudent, cautious thing. I'm going to kind of suss out that with some of my questions. So I got 10 questions here, and I'm going to pose them to both guys. I'll start with Jim. Should we have seen this pandemic coming, and were we prepared for it?
For just the general public to say that we should have seen it coming or not, I think it's hard to say. We don't know what the government had as information. We don't know what China was telling us or wasn't telling us. I think potentially because of Italy, I think maybe we could have reacted a little sooner, because I think it's very possible China was giving us garbage information and can't really trust those guys, and the numbers are up and down or whatever. But, you know, maybe had we looked at Italy first and seen how things were kind of getting out of hand there, then, you know, maybe we could have taken some steps a little bit earlier.
What do you think, Tim? Were we prepared?
I'm going to say ditto to what Jim said. You said none of us have the information that our government had. You got to kind of watch what you hear in the media and so forth. And I guess I've never really dug into it. It's hard to say whether we acted early enough or not.
I will say this, that I agree again with you guys talking about this whole Italy thing. But that being said, I don't remember there being a clamor to shut down until that NBA game. I don't remember March 2nd people saying, we got to close things. Do you remember that or not?
It hit fast. I went to Costa Rica, what was that, in February? And they started, you know, asking you questions if you went to China at the airports and stuff like that. But it was kind of like a new thing. And I don't think anybody really took it too seriously. There was a few people in the airports that were wearing masks at that time and so forth. But I don't know what everybody else was thinking, but I don't think anybody really took it too serious at that point. I guess the first we heard about it was in Trump's State of the Union right after the impeachment trial. He brought it up. When was that? January, February?
Yeah. You know, and I also wonder how often do they hear about, hey, this serious thing, and it turns into, I don't want to say nothing, but it isn't quite as bad as what they expected, or they wanted to prepare for the worst in case it happened and that kind of thing. Right. So they might be hearing stuff like this all the time. You hear about this with terrorist attacks, right? How come they heard they had this information? How come they didn't stop it? Well, they get umpteen thousand leads every day, you know, they can follow up on every lead. So
Monday morning quarterbacks, you know,
right.
We really didn't know. We didn't have the information. It was a new thing. And we were just kind of, digesting what we were hearing at that time, you know?
I think one thing that made us a little less likely to act was that we remembered SARS, remembered MERS, remembered Ebola, and none of those things really blossomed into anything too bad. And so we probably all thought this was going to be that.
Right.
And that's why I think the Italy and Spain issues, you know, once we saw that starting to get into Europe and getting pretty serious, then I think, and maybe that is when they started saying, hey, whoa, we got to take this seriously. But when you start talking about Italy and Spain, I think, at least for me, I start thinking, well, then, you know, they're not too far away from us in terms of medical care and that kind of thing. And so, you know, gosh, why wouldn't it be us? And
The second question I'm going to ask is probably the biggest one here, which is generally most Western countries, including the United States, decided on mass quarantines of everybody, the healthy and the vulnerable. Was that a good idea, or should there have been more targeted quarantines? Tim?
Well, I think in the very beginning, they did say, I think they used 60 and older as risk. I know it's gone up to 65 now, but in the beginning, they were pretty clear on who would be more at risk, older people with chronic conditions.
They did make clear who was more vulnerable.
Right.
But they decided on mass quarantines as opposed to targeted quarantines. Do you think that was a good tactic to do mass quarantines?
Well, we've never done mass quarantines before. This is the first time ever. So we've never quarantined healthy people before. So it was a little bit of an experiment. And obviously, they probably got that trend from what China had did and Italy and other countries. So, you know, embarking on a new thing that this country has never tried before.
Yeah. Jim, what do you think?
I think it was a thing that had to be done at the time. I mean, especially they talk about flatten the curve, the idea that if we can kind of slow the progression of this thing, understanding that we're not going to stop it, but if we can slow it, at least we can manage it, and we can prevent deaths that are preventable, right? That's kind of the idea. We don't want to run into a situation where we don't have the equipment or the hospital space or to treat the people that we could treat if we did have that space, and then they end up dying. I'm skirting the question. I'm being a real politician, I guess. But
I think that was a good answer. I mean, that was the basic thing in the beginning. It was flatten the curve. Also, we didn't want to have overflow in hospitals. We weren't in a position to be really prepared for a pandemic. So we wanted to make sure that the infrastructure was getting formed and that hospitals wouldn't be overrun with COVID-19 patients. And so, I mean, that was the initial goals.
I think pretty much everybody was on board for that first couple weeks, if not that first month. But once numbers started coming back, they weren't quite as scary. Jim, when was the time to start reconsidering the quarantine, the mass quarantine, in light of the new information?
That's a good question. But the unfortunate thing about the mass quarantine for those people who had to make the decision to do that is that if we did it right, we would have low numbers and people wouldn't be dying. That's what we wanted to do. But of course, as soon as that happens, then people say, look, everything's fine. Why do we even do this? How come we got to keep doing this? Everything's fine. Well, is it fine because the disease is not as potent as we thought it was? Or is it fine because we haven't been spreading it as much as we could have been had we continued our normal life? So the problem I think that we're running into now is that people know this is out there and nobody wants to get it. And they feel like the way not to get it is not to interact with people, right? But they forget the idea is to flatten the curve. It doesn't mean nobody gets this thing anymore. It doesn't mean, you know, we're all going to stay away from each other so nobody gets it. The whole idea is if we get it, it's manageable, it's treatable. You're not having as many people dying unnecessarily. That's the whole idea. So you do have to open up. The challenge now, though, and like Tim said, was this has never been done before. So the problem is if, and I don't think this really happened, if everybody stayed in their little pods and nobody interacted like they're supposed to, as soon as you let them interact, well, now you have a potential for that spike again. So how do you release the people slow enough to the point where you don't spike that curve? The whole idea was flatten the curve, or did we just shift the spike?
Of course, a true quarantine wasn't possible. They still allowed people to go to grocery stores and Target. And right. So could never truly have a true quarantine. People sure. Were always going to interact.
Well, I think they were correct, you know, the federal government leaving it up to the states, because the metropolitan areas, like you guys live in Milwaukee, are definitely hot spots. They should have different opening standards than, say, Montana, which, what has there been, one death in Montana? So their relative risk is very low. How many, what is it, 9 states that never did close? Is that right?
Yeah.
About 9 states?
I think it was like, 7 to 9. What is your current understanding of the mortality rate? I believe early on that the World Health Organization pegged it at about 3.5% of the people that got it were going to die. That number's been scaled back. What do you think the true number is going to be once it all comes out in the end?
Well, I just hope that those numbers are accurate. I mean, everybody is
those numbers, actually, like I said, that 3.5% is a high estimate. What do you think?
And you know, Chris, I'm not a conspiracy guy, and so it bothers me when I hear these things, and I want to, you know, we see patients that work in hospitals, and I'm in the Bell City of Mount Pleasant, Racine area. You ever hear that term, Bell City?
No.
Yeah, they call Racine the Bell City. I think it goes back to pioneer days. But anyway, you know, we've got some hospitals here, and so I treat a lot of nurses and doctors and stuff, and they've laid a lot of them off. And you hear people that are working in the hospital, I don't know if you've heard this, Chris, but several people saying that they're labeling people COVID-19 so they get more federal funds. Now, I like to think that that can't be true. I want to believe that the numbers are accurate, you know.
I do know that the right believes that fewer people are dying from this than is officially reported, and the left generally believes more people are dying.
And I don't even think it's right and left, because I got some very liberal friends that work in hospitals, too, that have said these things to me. So I don't think it's a right or left thing. You want to believe in the numbers. You really do, because that's really all we have. I would hope that they're not labeling people COVID-19, you know, say, and who was it, Elon Musk, that came out last week and said the average age of people that die from COVID-19 is about the same as the average lifespan So they're labeling people as COVID-19 deaths that maybe died of a heart attack. Maybe they also had COVID-19. I don't know. I don't really know, you know, the accuracy of the numbers. There's always going to be a scientific error in that too, but.
The statistic that I heard that is what you're talking about is they say the average age of people that die from COVID is higher than the average age of people who die.
Which is even scarier. I said it was about the same, but it's within a year or two. That's kind of crazy when you think of it, and I'm guessing that's in the 80s. 70% of the deaths have been in nursing homes, so definitely need to protect the people that are vulnerable, you know?
Right. Jim, now this is another thing that's coming out right now is school in September. Do you think they should reopen schools in September?
You know, September's a long way away, especially the way this thing has progressed. I mean, it's every day you're hearing something new. You know, in the last week or two, there have been reports of this Kawasaki syndrome with kids who contract this virus and this potential for this inflammation thing that they don't know about. I think there's so many unknowns. Not trying to skirt the issue. I think right now, and maybe this is jumping the gun for another question you have, but I think the most important thing to focus on is treatment of this thing. If they have a solid treatment where they can prevent most of the deaths or you know, help people get through this, sort of like a Theraflu type of thing, you know, right. Then I think that goes a long way to saying, yeah, okay, open schools. I mean, everybody knows the schools are the spreaders of all the disease. I mean, you know, the kids pick each other's noses and all this other stuff, you know, so then they take it home. And so it could be potentially be a trouble spot in spreading the whole thing.
Knowing what you know now, would you open schools tomorrow?
No, I don't think I would.
Hey, Chris or Jim, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
What is the number one determining factor when a healthy person is exposed to the COVID-19, whether they're going to get sick or get the symptoms or get it, basically?
Well, we don't know, as far as I know.
We do, though. It's a history of being exposed to viruses because there is a crossover effect. If you've had the COVID-19 virus, you've got the best immunity. If you're a healthy person, the COVID virus is very similar to the common cold, they say. They're both coronaviruses. It's also not that much different than SARS-1. So if you have a history of being exposed, and this is for a healthy person, obviously if you're immune compromised, this doesn't work. Yeah. But for a healthy person, there is a crossover effect with viruses. So if you have a virus that's similar to the COVID-19, you're less likely to get COVID-19. If you've had COVID-19, you're less likely to get the common cold. And you've probably heard the herd, what do they call that? Herd immunity or whatever. Mm-hmm. 80-90% of the population with antibodies, and it'll pretty much go away. And you know, the thing you said about schools, you know, spreading the viruses. Chris, you heard about the study in Australia or the numbers in Australia.
Yeah.
And what are they, like 3-4 months ahead of us with this? And they have opened up everything, and they've also opened up schools and gone back to school. And they haven't seen a, I don't want to use the word spike or resurgent.
Yeah, I know there is yet to be a confirmed case of a child transferring this illness to an adult.
Well, I didn't know that, but I do know this, the mortality rate in children is close to zero.
In New York State, which has had the most deaths in any state, so far there's been exactly zero deaths of children under 18. And Jim said, you know, how would you know that? That was done through early contact tracing in countries that got it to start with, and they've yet to find any child that transmitted this to an adult. And it has to do with how the virus behaves in somebody that's younger.
Mm-hmm. Right. So kids under 18, very, 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 you know, low death rates and that kind of thing. And now this other syndrome pops up. And I understand that, you know, there's a lot of times you'll see in the news, oh, here's a news story. Here's a guy who was 42, perfectly healthy, bodybuilder. He got it. He almost died. Okay. The percentages of those people obviously are very low, but it looks high when you put it in the news, right? So I understand it may be a situation where 50, 100 kids out of 20 million got this thing, and now it's in the news because of this thing? Or is it something that's progressing that we just don't know enough about this thing for?
I've seen the stories about this Kawasaki syndrome, and I think they've irresponsibly led off the nightly news with a syndrome that far less number of kids are going to get hurt by this than get coconuts dropped on their head. This Kawasaki syndrome is so...
Wait, that's happening too? Hold What's on, that? That's happening? The coconut thing is happening too?
We got a quarantine. you know.
No palm trees.
The media has hooked up this new thing with children in regards to the syndrome. And right now there's no direct link that COVID is causing this problem. Yet they're trying to, I believe, scare people into demanding that school not start in September. I think it's media showing advocacy for a point of view, which I've got a problem with.
I guess my question really is, to what end? Like, why? It's same thing with, like, you know, our governor gets a lot of crap for what he's been doing. And they say, oh, it's just political, this political. How can that be a political? This is political suicide. There's no way a politician would do something like this, tank his own economy.
Okay.
Just in order to...
Let me riddle you this, Jim.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you, because I'm not a conspiracy person either. But you know, you've heard why people think they're doing this. They don't want the economy to tank because it gives them power. And it absolutely helps their case for getting rid of Trump. I don't want to believe in that either, because I would hope that they have their people's best interest in mind. But that's what you hear from that side. And it's bad, because people do make this a political thing. You know, I'd like to think that politicians aren't motivated by power. I mean, we all would like to think that they represent us and they're doing what they feel is best for the majority of people. You know, there is a relative risk with opening up, but there's also a big risk of shutting down the economy. And, you know, 2 to 3 weeks is one thing, but 2 to 3 months, it's like, you know, how long is it going to take the economy to get better? And more people are going to die. That is the fact. You're absolutely right, Jim. More people are going to die.
No, I didn't say that.
You know, that's that argument. People are going to die and we're going to have a resurgence. And yeah, we are. But also, you know, you have young kids, and it's like, we're going to start running up this debt. What'd they say? Like, they started with $3 trillion? That's a hard concept. And now it's $5 trillion they're talking about, stimulus package. And it's just like, we're going to burden generations after this, the way we handle this. And there are going to be more deaths if we open up the economy. But there's also going to be, you know, there's families starving right now because of this thing. There's businesses that are going out of business. There's people that are losing their jobs. So we're so focused on the COVID-19 that we're going to let a lot of other things happen that are pretty insidious for this nation as well, you know?
Right. So on Facebook, you see these people, the civil liberties, yada, yada. And I completely understand, especially, I mean, when your back's against the wall, and I mean, I'm furloughed. I've been furloughed for a month. I'm furloughed for another month. I mean, so I'm right there with all, you know, and I understand opening businesses and doing it responsibly. What I don't understand, and maybe, I don't know what camp you guys are in with this, so maybe I should shut my mouth before I know. But what I don't understand is people who don't want to wear masks. Okay, if a mask helps, which I think to a certain extent it has to. It's not going to help me, right? It's going to help projecting all the whatever, spit and all that stuff, right? If that helps, if you can do that and it's going to help, why are people so uptight about this? Why are they so against this?
I agree with you. If it helps in the least amount, you know, it makes sense and stuff. I think the distancing and all that stuff is great, you know, and you have to respect that 6 foot, 6 feet or whatever, you know, and I agree with all that stuff. It really depends on how people are bent to begin with, you know. If they really feel like the federal government should not dictate your behavior and this and that, they're going to fight this thing, you know? And I understand their position too, because they see it as a slippery slope. They see it as, oh, I start giving up the right to not wear a mask, and pretty soon what other rights that I have as a person are they going to take away?
A couple of things. One, as you referenced Facebook, I think a lot of arguments go on Facebook that don't happen in real life.
Right.
I've been out there and I don't see people battling over face masks. I have yet to see an argument in real life regarding a face mask.
I agree with Chris on that. I don't think even the other side has a big problem with that, but there are that small group of people that maybe do because they think that's a civil liberty or whatever they're giving up.
Here's where I see it, though. Where I see it. And it's not a battle. It's not a words battle. It's not an argument. I went to Costco a month ago when they didn't have their mandatory mask in place.
Right.
And it was 50-50. So it's just people saying, F you, I'm not wearing a mask. So to me, that's what I see is that's the argument.
I'll say this, the whole thing that they're saying, F you, by not wearing a mask, I don't think it's that strong. I just think it's people that don't think it's as important, or people that forget, or people that, like I said,
I agree with Chris on this. I'm going into stores now, and I'll tell you what, I go to Costco as well, and you have to wear a mask there. But I go in some stores where grocery stores, you don't have to wear a mask either. I think people are very respectful. There's a lot of people wearing masks. The majority of people are wearing masks right now. There's a lot of people given that 6-foot distance. Just seeing people with masks reminds you of, you know what, I'm not going to get too close to this person.
A lot of it is just social pressure that even people that think the whole mask thing is a bunch of kabuki theater, that they do it just so that they don't stick out.
Right. Yeah, and I think I agree with Jim in the sense that it seems like whatever side you're on, the other side is digging in deep, you know, in their heels, when I think there's a lot more people that are just kind of like middle of the roads, and they're like, oh, you know what, we got to balance the economy with not exposing people that are at risk and so forth. So I think most people are reasonable. When I go out, I see, I'm going back to my gym now and working out, and they've taken a lot of precautions.
Jim, I just want to get back to that. Yeah. Have you, because I have not, and I think Tim is saying the same thing, I have not seen anybody in public debate or be disrespectful of anybody in regards to this coronavirus.
I'm trying to think if I've been to the grocery store other than Costco, but I don't think I have. But I know I'm walking, everybody's aware of, hey, if somebody's coming up on me, I walk in the middle of the road if I have to. I get around them. It feels really stupid, but you have to assume everybody's got this thing. And that's why I'm saying with the mask. So these guys, okay, and you're going on the premise that, you know, if you had a discussion with a guy in person, you wouldn't, probably most people wouldn't argue with you about this mask thing. But some people don't wear masks. And then they are the same people who ask, why is the government telling me to do stuff? If a mask is going to lower this whole thing and you won't do it, that's why the government has to step in and say, hey, now it's a law, okay? You forced our hand. If you would all just do it, then we wouldn't have a problem. But that's why the government steps in and does stuff, because people won't do it on their own. Do you think that if we hadn't had the mandatory quarantine and the social distancing, if the government hadn't come out and said social distance, do all this stuff, you think more than 50% would do that on their own?
I think a significant portion of people would. I think that the government essentially made a mistake in the beginning by not emphasizing vulnerable populations and hyper quarantining those people and posting guards at nursing homes and testing anybody that went into a nursing home and talking about guidelines regarding people with diabetes and people with asthma and allergies, getting very specific with and targeted with their quarantines. Then I think people would have respected it. But this general quarantine that's got such vague rules, it led people to question the efficacy of it.
Yeah. Don't you think, too, that the government could spend more time balancing these restrictions with empowering people to make right choices, too? You know, you've heard that those testings they're doing with people that get COVID-19, most of them are deficient in vitamin D. And then also, if you're exercising, if obviously you don't want to be obese because that puts you at a higher risk. If we could get people to a lot of common sense solutions and preventative ways, as well as, you know, stocking up on your vitamin D, your C, and your zinc, also exercising, because if you exercise, you're less likely to get COVID-19. And if you get COVID-19, if you exercise, you will get rid of it faster. These are all pretty basic things. You know, you're talking about disinfectants. Best disinfectant is oxygen. Obviously, one of our first defenses is hydrogen peroxide, H2O2, and our body can make that, you know. So our body's own immune system has a lot of things it can do. We need to empower people to start making good choices, as well as wearing the masks and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of times we don't spend enough time on those types of things that everybody can do, and you can empower people with that.
But, you know, I totally agree with you. Here's the issue, Tim. We're the most obese we've ever been. Healthcare companies have had to come in and say, look, if you don't do this, this, and this, then you're going to have higher rates, because so many people don't take the opportunity to take care of themselves.
People don't want to take responsibility either.
Right. And that's the thing. And that's why they have to have other authority come in and say, hey, you got to do this. It's kind of for your own good, but it's...
I agree with everything you're saying, Jim. All I'm just saying is we need to balance it.
I guess what I'm saying is, you know, you're saying things that are basically like, hey, keep yourself healthy.
Right.
Like, that's no different than any other time, and people don't do it. So now what do you do? You know, as a government, like if you're in the government's position, now what do you do? People don't use that empowerment to help themselves. So what do you do? Oh, well, good luck. I mean, no, you're not going to say good luck, because it just doesn't work that way. So now you come and say, okay, well, now we're going to say you have to. It's like a parent, right? I have to tell you this. You're not making the right decisions. I've got to make some decisions for you now.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to like it. And then you're going to yell about your civil liberties. Blah, 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 blah. Then do it, you know, then be healthier.
Yeah. And I'll say this honestly, and again, you might disagree, but I think by and large, the American public has followed most of these guidelines and has, I'm not talking about their health, but in terms of social distancing and staying home. And it really took about a month before people started protesting. And to get a whole nation to buckle down for a month, I think we did pretty good.
Oh, I agree. And like I said, too, I certainly understand there's a bunch of things, you know, the mental aspect of this whole thing. This is a little personal note, but the last couple of days I've had like some what I would feel like were depression symptoms. I mean, like, you know, up and down roller coaster, like really down, then just be normal. And then like, all of a sudden, and for no reason. I mean, like, you know, so I can relate to that. I can certainly understand the loss of income, and like now you're backed against the wall and people start to get scared. Of course, you know, it's their livelihood, it's their family. They're going to come out, you know, they feel like they're backing into a corner. I get all that. I'm saying my stand now is with the mask. Fine. Open the things up. Everybody who's opening up that I've seen, except for a couple of stupid bars on the news, right, has like, look, two bar seats between you. We're only opening up these booths, all these things that are very, careful to go with the social distancing guidelines. I'm saying just throw a dang mask on, you know, and because they're saying that this will prevent a lot of this, a lot of these things, we will not have to worry about the spread nearly as much just by wearing a mask.
I wear the mask largely out of courtesy. I do think there's a certain hubris that people are showing, that they think they can stop the spread of this virus, this microorganism, with a few masks and plexiglass shields. I think to some extent we're lying to ourselves.
And honestly, that's the debate too, you know, because you get some health experts that say that it has little or no effect and it's given people false confidence and everything. But I kind of agree with the mental aspects of the mask. It makes people feel more comfortable getting out, and it makes people feel more comfortable if they go to a restaurant and their waitress has got a mask on. From just a pure mental standpoint, maybe that's a good idea.
I want to wrap it up with just a couple questions. I'll bring up two countries. First, Sweden. Sweden doing the right thing or the wrong thing? Jim?
You know, they're just letting basically life as usual, right? That's what they're doing?
Not really. Sweden actually did what I mentioned in the beginning, which is targeted quarantines and government recommendations, but no government mandates. They said, be smart about it. Keep your social distancing. We're going to keep the primary schools open. We're going to quarantine the vulnerable. And people can go to get their haircuts and go to restaurants and get together in groups of 50 or less. So that was kind of how they did it.
Okay. Yeah. So there was the hyper-quarantine, you were saying?
And their numbers are pretty similar to Norway. They're a little bit worse, but Norway closed down and Sweden didn't. And there's not that much difference between the numbers. Is that
actually there's a pretty significant difference between Norway and Sweden. Sweden, relative to its Nordic neighbors, has got higher rates, but of course you'd expect that with
right. society. But there's still Sweden was better than all the other European, like they were better than France, Belgium, right. a lot right. of the other countries that did shut down. So
and they stated that this was not part of their original plan, but this is what it's turning into, which is the idea of herd immunity, letting people get the virus that are younger and healthier and develop antibodies, and so that you can stop the spread of the virus in that country by having more people have it, the right people get it. Jim, I'd imagine, you know, what we talked about this before, yeah. your idea is that going for this herd immunity is going to result in too many deaths.
Well, let me ask you this. My question is, when did they start social distancing and that kind of thing? And how much are they doing with that? Because if they're just hanging around like normal, I think that could get them in trouble at some point, just because of the spike we talked about, right? I mean, and it all depends. If they said early on, hey, stay far away from each other, and their people are like, oh, okay, fine, we'll stay a little bit farther away from each other. And, you know, I don't know if they're wearing, I don't think they're wearing masks, not from anything I saw.
No, they're not really.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know,
so
then, and I agree with Jim on this, and I don't know if you said it specifically, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think we do have to look at the numbers, and I do think we have to see what the response is once we do start opening things up, and we could always pull back on it. And in areas where they're not seeing a resurgence or a spike and so forth, we need to educate people and use the bully pulpit to let people know the safeguards and stuff and the things you should do with social distancing. But also in certain rural areas, especially, you know, where there's hardly any cases of this, you know, we need to be able to get the economy going and rolling and opening things up, you know?
Yep. Certainly understand wanting to get the economy going. And if we do it safely and, you know, with the distancing, and again, not to have that spike, right? If we still have the distancing and we don't have everybody just piling into a clump together, you know, and where all of a sudden, you know, you got 50,000 people in Milwaukee, you got it. Okay, then we're in trouble, right? But if you can spread that out and slow that progression, I think that's best case scenario. I think that's all you can really ask.
Let me ask you this question, Jim. Do you think sometimes, like in the Bell City here, I've heard we've had a little bit of a resurgence and so forth. Do you think that could have more to do with free testing and so forth? Because I'm hearing on the radios now, go down to Festival Hall for free testing. Burlington has free testing. It's like, we didn't hear that a month ago. Right. So I just think there's so many more people being tested. And you know what the beautiful thing is? I actually have heard for the first time on the radio, I think it was Wednesday, that they actually said, well, this many people tested positive in Racine County, but they also said how many people tested negatively. Because you don't usually hear that from the media. You think that they're trying to influence, because people have trouble putting things in perspective. They'll hear 11 deaths in the last 2 weeks in Racine County, and they don't realize we have 350,000 people. You know, yeah. So that shakes them to the core and probably makes them more fearful than they really need to be.
Yeah, I think a couple of things about that. I think the fact that you can't look at the number of positive tests for exactly that reason, right? That all of a sudden the tests are more available. People are going to get these tests. Oh, they're testing positive. Okay, you know, I was sort of puzzling this out with Harper the other night, and the only thing I could come up with is what might be the most important statistic is how many people are being hospitalized for this.
Right.
And so if that is starting to spike, if that's going up on a steep curve, well, now we got to be careful. We might have a problem.
Now we got to pull back the reins a little bit.
Yeah, in all honesty, the hospitalizations have not been a problem outside of New York metro area, Boston, Detroit, and New Orleans. Outside of that,
quarantine worked.
What's that?
That's what you can say. The quarantine worked then.
Well, they didn't do that in New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey.
I'll say this:
that was a problem. And what is there? Some lawsuits going on now, because wasn't it New York that sent COVID-19 positive people into the nursing homes and so forth?
Right.
They did it in New Jersey and Pennsylvania as well. That was the wrong thing to do. And Cuomo has switched that in New York this week. That just seems like a really bad decision.
Well, I will argue with Jim. You said the quarantine worked. There were more cases in Wisconsin before there was even a case in New York City. So we had time for this thing to build up in Wisconsin. Did the quarantine work? I'd argue that it had minimal to no effect in Wisconsin because it was here before that. And New York got it, and they got their spike, and we didn't get a spike.
And I'll tell you, on a positive note, one thing that has come off of this that is a positive thing for the future is we do have a better infrastructure now. They are getting better with the testing, and I think we are going to be more prepared when we do have a resurgence, when we start opening things up. And those are all good things.
My last question here for you guys is, Trump says we got to make sure that the cure is not worse than the disease. And there's a lot of people that believe that it's baked in the cake now that the quarantines have caused the cure to be worse than the disease, not only in the short term in terms of people being furloughed, in terms of alcoholism and suicide, depression, but in terms of economic malaise that could last for years and decades, that could cause mortality rates to spike from other things, and that the deaths from the quarantine could dwarf what happened with the disease. Do you give that any credence, Jim?
You know, honestly, I don't mean to skirt the question. I don't think we can say that yet. I think once we open, completely open, and go back to normal, if this thing is as bad as everybody said it was, we're going to have more problems, right? And then we're going to have more deaths and all this kind of stuff. And we'll really get to see what is this thing all about, I think. I don't think it has a 3.5% death rate. I don't think it has that. But even if it's got, what, a 1%, 1.5%, that's, what is that?
That's the flu.
The flu is like,
it's real close to the flu now. The numbers are coming real close to the flu.
The flu is 0.1, and the highest estimate I've heard for this currently is 0.5. The reason that this is more deadly than the flu is because it's more contagious.
Well, it's going to be more contagious because we haven't had this in the system, so people don't have antibodies. Yeah. So that's just a given. And it's different than the flu, too. It does attack the respiratory system more. It's more risky for the elderly, although a lot of the elderly die of the flu as well.
Let Jim get back to his point. Okay. You were building up to something, Jim. You were saying.
Oh, I was just saying that it's got potential to be bad if we let it get out of control.
The second wave.
Right. If people start seeing like we're 6 feet away, but we're 3 feet away, we're 2 feet away, we're crowded in a bar. If those things start to spike, we talked about the hospitalization rates and all that stuff. If we start to see that going up and we don't do anything about it, I think we're going to have a big, big problem.
Honestly, I think what this country needs is, and it'll sound bad, we need more infections. We need more people in our younger age groups to mill around, to be together. Younger, healthier people need to go out and mingle and get this thing.
Right. So you're the chicken pox thing, right?
Where, but all that has to be balanced out. It really does.
I'll say this, that people now that are elderly and have got comorbidities, they have to know by now that they need to have a strict adherence to the quarantine. Right. But if you're 25 and healthy, you should not be afraid of this.
The more absolutely. You know, what was that? Hong Kong flu during Woodstock, you know, so we had a pandemic during that and the young people were just going nuts. What was that? 67, 68?
69, yeah.
But here's how many people did that kill? 400,000, something like that. We'll not get even close to that with this thing, but we didn't have near as many people in the United States then. It's something I learned from this. I'd never realized that Woodstock was during the Hong Kong flu, but even H1N1 or whatever, SARS,
the bird flu.
Bird flu, Asian flu. I guess that's why in the very beginning when I heard about this, I didn't really give it that much seriousness, you know? Mm-hmm. We definitely know it's a serious thing now, and I think as a country we've reacted very well. I think we've reacted better than we ever would have reacted in the past. There's a lot of positives to take from this too, and I just think that the future is going to be just fine, you know, and I think having the infrastructure in place now, we're going to be more ready for this, but we definitely have to balance that with the economy and not put all our eggs in the COVID-19 basket, but also realize that we got to be smart. Like what Jim said, we got to do it in a very conscientious way. There's a lot of nuances to this disease, and it's a complex issue, and we got to just fight it the best we can. And I think the American people have really, you hear a lot of division and stuff, but you know, we got to fight this together.
Let me ask you guys this. If you get it, are you scared?
I'm not. I have no fear of it whatsoever. Because I'm a healthy, pretty much a healthy dude, you know.
I had the swine flu. I was sick for a couple of days. I was miserable, but I got through it. I think the stat I heard, the death rate for people under 30 for this year's model of the flu, you know, the COVID-19, is the same as last year's flu. And so if you're afraid of the flu and you're 30 years old this year, you should have been afraid last year.
Right. I think I heard that under the age of 21, the flu kills more people than COVID-19.
Correct. You know?
So we definitely have to look at the groups that are at risk, and we have to quarantine them for longer. And people need to educate themselves on this. And if they don't feel comfortable, if they feel like they're in the risk group and stuff, they need to be cautious about getting out there again. But as far as me, and I don't know how you feel, Chris, but I have no fear of getting this at all. Because I really feel like, number one, if I did get it, you know, 2 days to a week tops, and I'd be fine, and I'd have the antibodies, and, you know.
I think if you go out and go to the grocery store, as we all do, or go to Costco, as we all do, we stand a chance of getting it. I don't think there's anybody out there, other than people that never leave one room,
right,
that can truly say that they're not putting themselves at risk. And so you can't lead your life in one room.
You can't.
Everybody just has to accept that there's a good chance you're going to get this.
Right. And there is a relative risk, but there's a relative risk for all kinds of diseases. And people want to say that, well, you could be a carrier or this or that. I remember my senior year of basketball, and you know, we're all drinking out of the same water bottles, and a couple guys got mono, and that's highly contagious. And I never got sick, but I was a carrier. And all kinds of these, you know, viruses and bacteria and stuff are contagious. So you're at risk for a lot of things. And I think sometimes we've definitely put, maybe for good reasons, a lot of focus on this COVID-19. But there's a lot of other things that are killing people too. Cancer, flu, and all these things. And I agree with Jim and the fact that we need to look at all different sources, you know, therapy type of things, preventative. But even if we get a vaccination, because people think that's the end all too, and it's like,
yeah,
how good is that working on the flu? It right. is a virus, right. And it's not that much different. So maybe 50% of the population will get that. I don't think we should make it mandatory, because you hear that. I think that would be a big mistake. But even so, that's not 100% immunity either, you know?
I want to kind of wrap it up. I want to thank Tim for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, guys. It was a very good conversation. And you guys both articulate your points very good. So I think there's a lot of things, even though we have a little bit different posturing and perspective, I think we all agree on the majority of what each one of us were talking about.
All right. Well, let's count it down to the music here. So let's we're going to count down 3, 2, 1, and we'll get started here. So here we go.
3, 2, 1. More Maker's Mark. Music.
All right.
He was counting back in Norwegian.
In Norwegian, yeah. So. Am, to, tre, tro, tre, to, am. I could still count backwards in Norwegian.
That's pretty good.
I think they do that in the sobriety.
Thanks again, Tim.
All right. Thanks, Jim. All right. Thanks, Chris. All right.